We are involved in giving kashkacha on kosher food. So usually we talk about kosher food. But the truth is that there's the amount of trade food is much more limited, at least in the theoretical sense. And therefore, today we're going to talk about thinking about a whole bunch of different non-kosher things, ways that things can be non-kosher. I counted 18 of them, ways things can be trade. And by knowing those, then we sort of we eliminate that, then, so to speak, everything else is kosher, so to speak. We're gonna talk about for those things. I'm gonna break them up into like five groups, and in those there's gonna be all these different potentially surim. I'm gonna be focusing on things that are usur, that their isur would be relevant to as an ingredient. What I mean is there are some surim that are totally like no shaychas to us, like petach hamar and kachim. Okay, and even Avodah Zarah actually comes up once in a while, but Akiva just had a dealing with one about Trappist beer and El Sistine, but those are basically don't come out to us. Some called Trappist beer. Avodah Zarah, two Avodah Zarah, they come up every once in a while, but we're going to ignore those. And then there are some Yisurim that are relevant for Hashkafas, but they're not relevant for, like, when a person or a Hashkafas is buying something, like things about Maisa Shabbos. Like, so there are Yisurim on foods, but it has nothing to do with an ingredient. We don't care about that. That's not relevant to an ingredient. And things like basar b'chalav is not negated to an ingredient. It's negated to hashkacha, but not to an ingredient, because basar is assumed to be treif. Meat and mark is not considered kosher, so we never deal with basar b'chalav. It's always basar, which is treif anyhow. So basar b'chalav, if you're giving hashkacha, you have to think about basar b'chalav, but not if you're getting it as an ingredient or you're buying something. Okay. So that's what we're not going to talk about. Okay. So the first group is behemoth man. Okay, so the most obvious thing is what we had on here before him, that something comes from a non-kosher min, or didn't have shechita, it's also mitaraisa. Okay, that's the most serious isser we've ever come across. And they're so obvious that those things are usher, like so clear that it's not relevant. You know, no one buys meat, anything comes from that meat or poultry that doesn't have a shkach, it's obviously not kosher. That's like obvious us. That's like they're totally not even like in the range of things. What we do deal with those kind of things are, I'll give you two examples of things that we deal with that have to do with that. One is gelatin. That comes from the hides or the bones of an animal. Use all kinds of chemicals to separate everything else out and leave just the gelatin behind. So there were those who held that it was mutter. If it comes from bones or from cattle hides, most people don't hold like that. Most people held that since it's lamaise, it's a food ingredient in the end, then it's okay. It's not okay. And second is, in addition, is that those poskim spoke about it for bones and cow hides, which are both considered not royal achila. So it's a question, maybe she's not royal achila. Nowadays, most gelatin comes from pig skins, and there's actually a mission that says that pig skins are considered royal achila. Okay, pig skins in particular are considered royal achila. So it makes the shadow more serious, if you could say that. Okay, but because the other example is something that we deal with more, and that is fatty acids. Okay? Ooh, you can't see the whole chart. Sorry, the top is not on this very piece of remote. You guys can see it. Okay. And fatty acids is that oils and fats, don't get scared by this yet. Oils and fats are made of two parts. It has one part that looks, so to speak, like the letter E, that's a glycerin. Okay, it has like a bar with three things coming out of it, like the capital letter E. And has three fatty acids. and the difference between one oil or fat and the next completely depends on those fatty acids. I mean, the glycerin part of it is identical. It makes a difference which one comes from. The fatty acid part is what makes a difference. So you want to know why animal fat is a solid at room temperature and olive oil is not. It has to do with the fatty acids that are in them. And the composition of which fatty acids are attached to that glycerin is what makes the difference between them. Or why they have all kinds of other properties, why they taste different. All their properties have to do with their fatty acids. The glycerin part of it is exactly the same. So glycerin that comes from an animal is not kosher. Again, from our perspective, it's not kosher. It's an novella, and it's well, from a mint helmet. Usually it's just an novella. And the fatty acids also. The fatty acids is considered the more kosher part. The fatty acids also depends on where they came from. So you see here in the chart, the different fatty acids that there are. You see they have a C next to them, C8 and C10 and C12 like that. That's with how many carbons there are, how long the fatty acid chain is. So the ones with higher chains, like C16 or 18, or it goes higher, but for our purposes, C16 and C18, those are the ones that come from, are more common to come from animal fat. So we call those palmitic acid, oleic, or stearic acid, linoleic acid, these different ones that have the longer carbon chains, so look at animal fat, beef fat, has 43% oleic acid, you know what I mean, 24% palmitic acid, and 20% stearic acid. So it's a good source for those things. Okay, so what the company's going to do is, they're going to break apart the fat or the oil.
What's the rest of it?
So the tiny minor parts. They don't all add up to 100, because I didn't put in things that are like a half of a percent or 1% like that, you know. So I didn't count up. It may even be more than 100%.
You said beef fat is, let's say, 43% oleic acid.
Mm-hmm.
It's 24. Okay.
So you add it all together. So what goes on, there's two steps. First, you have to break it apart. You have to separate the glycerin from the fatty acid. That's at very high temperatures and pressures.
What is fatty acid?
C, right. It's called caprylic acid. And see how many carbons there are in the chain. The fatty acid looks like a long line. How many carbons there are in that? So that one has 8 carbons.
That's stearic acid. Kind of
that's correct, but that's because it's far away from any shaychus it is, and it's usually actually not even made from even vegetable oils. It's made from, you know, so the higher ones are potentially made from animal fat. So what we're talking about for right now is just that the possibility they're made from animal fat. So first you have to split it apart from the glycerin, and then after you split it apart from the glycerin, then you have to separate the different fatty acids that you got into the ones you want. Okay, so, for example...
How's the separation done? Distillation?
Yeah, right, distillation. A very advanced distillation that could separate between such fine, you know, subtleties between the C16 and C18. So magnesium stearate is made from magnesium with stearic acid. Okay, so if you make a pill of magnesium stearate is sensitive because the stearic acid might be from an animal. Okay, or glycerol monooleate. That's made from glycerin and oleic acid put back together. So both of those could be traced. Both of those could have been from animal sources. And mamela, that's used as an emulsifier. So those are both could be from animal sources, so that's why it would be traced. Okay, now, until the very end, which I don't know if we're going to get to today, we're not going to talk about the kalin, because right now we're talking about just that it's traced by itself. So stearic acid, good chance that it comes from animal fat. You see that they're really high in stearic acid, high compared to other things. So it's a good source of that. So when you break apart, let's say you break apart lard, and you break it up, get rid of the glycerin, and they have just the fatty acids. You break apart the fatty acids, and you get some palmitic, some oleic, a little linoleic, and some stearic. And that is a good source for those fatty acids, for those things. Okay, and it's hard to get them out of other things. There's not much of them, anything less. Okay, so that's what we're going to say for animal product, animal mammoths that come from animals. At a different time, we'll talk about all kinds of other stuff that comes from animals that could be kosher or not. That's not for today. Okay, these are the things that are mamash come from like animal fat. Okay, next is fish. So there's and fish don't have any dinim of nevelas and trefas. So a fish just has to be from a kosher min. There's no rules on an animal. It could come from a cow, but it's tref because it's nevelas and trefas. But fish don't have such a din. So assuming it has, it's from a kosher min. It's kosher. What makes it a kosher min? It has to have scales that when you pull them off, don't rip the skin. I thought about bringing them in here. It's really easy to do. Once you've seen it once, it's not so complicated. You have to be able to rip out the scale without ripping the skin. And it has to be dead. It has to be shemias, so it has to be dead also. But it doesn't need any shechit or anything like that. What do you say?
Even on treatment fish, the oil is on the bottom?
Sear of a dog. I don't know if oil fits into that. I have no idea. That's a good question. I think it, yes. I believe you're correct. It may only go to the bottom. Okay, I wasn't talking about oil, but that's a good point. I think that it is.
How
do
you, maybe oil
is
different here.
I have to check, so I don't remember. Okay, so, but the thing is, once you fillet a fish, once you take off the skin, then there's no scales to see anymore. Okay, so you can't see the scales anymore, so then the fish is, you don't know if it's kosher or if it's not kosher, okay? So there's, as you know, there's a shaila of what happens if there's other halachos that they're using in kosher min. Like the company has a umul amar nafshe that he only uses a certain min. For some business reason, he only wants to use a certain min. So that's a big to-do. We talked about that when we looked at alcoholic beverages. Whether we should be samech on that, that's most famously known that tuna fish, but that's relevant to other things also. Okay. I'll mention in passing, it's not really so relevant, is that fish names don't mean anything. The same name means different things to different people. That doesn't mean anything. Okay. Now, there are some companies who, I told you, once you take the skin off, or once you get the scales off, then there's no way to know if it's kosher. So it became something, it's made for kosher people, that's what it's there for, which is to leave a skin tag. Okay? And what that means is, when they fillet the fish, they take off the skin, and they take all the scales, of course, and the skin off, but they leave a tiny piece, a patch on it, that still has scales on it. And the point of that is so that someone afterwards could recognize that it's a kosher fish. There's no other reason for it except for Yidden that they're doing this.
That's not confusion on this. It actually needs to have scales.
Yes.
It'll just look like
that's
that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It has to have scales, or you have to be a super expert who could tell. I could tell that there used to be kosher scales over here. Okay, most people have in the
world. Formation there, it looks like there were scales on them.
Maybe there's
scales. Are they not scaly fish?
Wait a second. There are tray fish that have scales also. Scales doesn't make you kosher. Scales have to be ones that when you pull them, it doesn't rip the skin out. So can you tell from that whether those would rip the skin? They wouldn't rip the skin. If you don't see an actual scale, how would you know? So skin tag seemingly is worthless if it doesn't have a scale on it that you should be able to tell. Can you look at this? This one, even harder to see the scales altogether. That there were scales, but...
You know, this problem of the skin thing is Ramban or Nabi Huda, it's
Mekubal.
It's not the Gemara, you know what I'm saying?
No, it's not.
So maybe we could figure out, like, which fish, because the Chashash, and I don't know, maybe that's not... You can tell this could think it'd be three or four or five fishes, not enough.
So, but that could be catfish. That could also be catfish. What looks like tilapia could also be catfish. So,
one sec, even with that skin patch, it could still be a catfish?
So, if you're a super expert, no really, if you really know so much about fish and what's out there in the market, then you could, you may be able to look at it and say, I can tell that it's a kosher fish, go for it. The same if you could tell that. But most people at $12 an hour, I don't feel like people anymore much, but $12 an hour can't tell the difference between one fish and the next fish. Okay, I once walked into a place and there was no hashgacha on the fish. I said, why do you have this fish for? So he says, oh, because fish X, I was told, doesn't need hashgacha. Okay, and that's what this is. This is fish. I'll take a name. Let's say he said tilapia. I have no idea what he said.
The guy said it's
mashgiach. Yeah. He says to me, let's say it's tilapia. I know tilapia doesn't need hashgacha. You can buy it any place you want. He said, and that's what it's tilapia, and it doesn't need hashgacha on it. So at first I told him that wasn't correct. And after a while, we turn around the box, and it said on it, it's a different fish, white fish. It's a different fish. So he was swearing me up and down that it's no problem, because it's tilapia. And on the box it said that it was some other fish, which it was claimed to be a kosher as well, so I'm not... Yeah, okay. So now, this that we're talking about fish fillets or fish steaks, like we see over here also, that's a fish. That's for the fish. That's, of course, true. But it's also true for the roe, okay, which is the fish eggs. Fish from inside the fish. Fish eggs from inside. That has to be from kosher fish. So in that context, the Torah says something, and the Beis Yosef explains it to mean that if you have roe that's red, then it's kosher. Okay, and the Beis Yosef says it must be. That's also not a Gemara. It must be that we know that it only comes from kosher fish. Okay, in fact, it commonly comes from salmon and trout type fish have red roe. So that's what's called red roe or red caviar. I guess Reb Chaim Goldberg, if that's still true, do they see it? He says, yeah, in the market, he doesn't see any red fish, any red roe that are not from kosher fish. But like you see in the picture, sturgeon, which is a tray fish. Has black caviar or green, you know, there's all different kinds of colors, and there are kosher fish that have black also. It's not that red is a sign that's a kosher fish, but I'm sorry, it's not that red is the only thing that comes from kosher fish, but red, the other way around, red tells us that it must be coming from a kosher fish.
So that's the halacha, you can buy red roe?
Yeah, so the Shulchan Aruch says it, and the Shulchan Aruch brings that you can do that. I said to Chaim Goldberg, who knows all the fish, I said, is that still true? I mean, it's not based on it's not halacha Moshe Sinai, it's based on a metzias. I said to him, do you think that's still true, that the only ones you could buy? And he said, yeah, he's never seen one that was from a tray fish. Okay, now, but that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. And the Beis Yosef is explaining where this came from. But the in modern times, people have extended the Beis Yosef to also talk of, to salmon fillets also, and another fish called steelhead trout, which is related fish. That salmon fillet, which is a different thing. Not, this is different than that, but it's a similar idea. And that is, all living beings have to store vitamin A someplace in their body, and salmon is a is, and again, steelhead trout are the fish that store it in their flesh. Okay, and therefore, when you see a piece of salmon, it has a distinct color because it stores its vitamin A in a certain part of it, in the flesh. Most other living things don't store it in their flesh. But if salmon does,
so you don't catch the gullet with orange.
That's correct. Well, human beings don't store it in their flesh either. I guess if you have enough of it, then it gets into your flesh, or it spills over. And so therefore, there's lots of people who will tell you, including the zero C, that if you buy salmon fillet, you don't have to have this scales on it because you, just by looking at the flesh color, you could tell that it's from what minute it is. Hey, if you know what minute it is, then it's a kosher minute, then you know it's kosher. Okay?
You can buy any raw salmon any place as long as you wash it off in case.
Aside from issues of maybe the knives in this net, besides that, both, let's see, it was cut commercially. So they didn't cut one fish, they cut a zillion pieces of fish that nobody told me to make a bite. Yes. Okay? We're not. We talked about a different time. We're not going to talk about today, but the worms that are in the fish. That's not relevant to this. Okay. One other thing, another somewhat common thing that comes from fish, isinglass comes from fish bladder. Okay, and it's used for as a clarifying agent, particularly for alcoholic beverages. This is true when they're viewed about it. It's usually the amount that's in there. It's baltim shishim, and it's you may even be allowed to put it in lechatchila. It may be. In kavanas levator, because you don't want, it's not, it doesn't stay there, even if you don't want it in the beer, it just clarifies it. It attracts the proteins to itself, and then now they all clump together and they sink to the bottom, and then you can just scoop them out. So it's a clarifying agent. It's not meant to stay in there, and you have no interest in having it in your beer. So you may even be allowed to put it in lechatchila, even with hashkacha, maybe. That's a question. Okay. Before we walk out, there's other things that I'm not mentioning. There's fish gelatin, of course, and fish paste, and fish oil. Just as an aside, you can't eat fish with meat. Okay, separate to this. That's not so much a gift hashkach. We get to how we label it. We have to mark it as fish. Okay. The last kind of behemoth mea, I'm calling it behemoth mea, so to speak, in this category are bugs. Okay, bugs are asur midraisa. And in some cases, you could be over on many lavin. The Gemara tells you how many lavin you could be over depending on which ones you eat. But that's in a theoretical sense. But in practice, for most of us, when we talk about eating bugs, for most of us, that's only a shayla a drabana for the following reason. To be over issa d'raisa, you have to have a bug and you eat it. So, for example, if you eat a cordyceps, it's a cordyceps. Is something that grows on worms, on a certain insect. And assuming you agree with me that they're usher, it's a question. Some people think they're mutter. It's a worm. It looks like a mushroom. It looks like it just grows out of the ground like a mushroom, but it's really growing on an insect. That's an isser. Okay, wonderful. So then you know what you ate, and that person who ate that thing was over the isser derived. Okay, but most of the time, we're not eating something that we know. We're not eating cordyceps. We're not eating a bug that by choice. We're eating a vegetable that is supposed to have, that has bugs in it, or theoretically has bugs in it. Okay, so the rule is like this. If most of the servings of that food will have bugs in it, then that's asur midraisa. It's called mochsa b'talayim. Most of the time you're going to eat it, you're going to be over an iser. That's asur midraisa to eat it. Fine. But other foods that just have it, it's common, what we say from 10 to 50% of the servings are going to have a bug in it, that's only a mirna matzui. It means it's matzui, it's common enough, and with the rabbanon, you have to check it, and you're not allowed to eat it until you check it. Okay? But most foods fall into that category of mirna matzui, and therefore it's the rabbanon to eat the food. It's not asur midraisa, it's only asur midraisa if more than half of them. Okay? So, and those, which ones are mirna matzui, which ones are mochzui, are, you know, that changes, so to speak, from day to day, and from, depending on what you think of, you know, which bugs are usher or not. But in most cases, for most times that we deal with it, most of the foods that we eat tend to be just the issa d'rabbanan, the mina matzah. Okay, now, when we talk about bugs being in foods, bugs in fruits and vegetables and herbs, that's true whether it's fresh or frozen. But if they are dried, either like by heat, dehydrated, like most of our spices in our cabinets are dehydrated, or the freeze dried, which is a more fancy process of how to do that, then we assume that the bugs have been dried out and they become like dirt and they don't count, they're not ulcer anymore. Okay, so when we deal with these kind of things in the fresh or the frozen version, as booked this week, we're dealing with IQF, I forgot which one it was.
Cilantro.
So frozen things, those the bugs are fine. The bugs are still there and they're ulcer. If the thing is infested, then the thing is ulcer. Okay? One last thing, one place where we know people put bugs in is carmine. Okay, carmine is a crushed up bug, and the cochineal bug it's called, and you use it to make reds and oranges and purples, different colorings. It seems like it's a really good dye for colorings. What'd you say?
Doesn't run,
that's its my list? Okay, fine. And people don't eat it by itself, that would be pretty strange. And it's in a small amount that would theoretically at least be balta b'shishim, but since it has an effect on the food, so we say chazusa milsa for yisurin d'oraisa, and therefore it's not going to be balta. But if you think for a second, that it's not balta, that's a d'rabanan. Chazusa milsa is a d'rabanan. So again, it's you may know that it's in there, but again, it's only if you eat it, it'll only be it's a d'rabanan to eat it. Okay. Not anything discrepant. I'd say it's less serious. It's not serious. That's why to lie. Fine. Okay. Our next section. I don't know if we're going to get past this next one this time. We may have to stop it. We'll see. Depends how patient you guys are. Okay. Really briefly, we'll talk about dairy products. Okay. We've talked about it before, and we will talk about more at different times. So today I'm going to give a real overview. Okay. And the most obvious thing that's wrong with dairy is. That you can't eat with meat. Okay, so we have to know what's in the milk because we can't eat with meat. Okay, doesn't make an ulcer, it just restricts us once we have it. But there's also an isser if we eat milk that there wasn't a yiddia by the milking, that's chol vakum. Some people hope that nowadays there's no problem with the milk in the countries like where we live in industrialized countries, because there's so much controls, we have a yiddia that this has come from a cow, that's called chol stam. Even those mekilim, most of them only say you could do that in places like the United States, where we're really comfortable that we know that it's coming from milk, but if it comes from, like sodium casein from India, or milk from dairy products from China, or other places like that, most hashgachas think that those kind of places you can't rely on that, and that it's just a plain old issur of chol vakum. It's everybody, but most people. Okay, there's another issur on dairy products that's called gvinas agum, which is when you make cheese with rennet. There's a chashash that you use kevis nevela, which would make the cheese treif, make cheese treif. So Chazal said a yid has to be gvinas yisrael. Okay, the Ramah says that to be gvinas yisrael, the yid has to watch them make the cheese, and the shaf says either he has to own the cheese or the milk, or he has to put the rent in it. Okay, there are those people, a lot of reputable poskim, like from more serious poskim, who thinks. That it goes for all cheeses, hard and soft cheeses, but afalpikin, it's mukubal, that it only goes for hard cheeses, like cheddar and mozzarella cheeses. Hard, in this sense, means ones that are made with rennet. Lafuke, one, what we call soft cheeses, like cream cheese, or maybe yogurts even, that are made with acid, that are acid set. Meaning, instead of, the way you get the curd to separate from the whey is not by putting in a rennet that does that, but by putting in something acidic, putting in lemon juice or vinegar or whatever, something else that's acidic or lactic acid that makes them separate from each other. We assume that those do not need to be green seasoned. Okay, now.
Do you say that number is acid, right?
No, because it's not considered gvina. That we don't consider that thing to be gvina, even though it's separated, you've separated curd from whey.
Will create such a cheese?
No, it won't. So that's a reason to say, yeah, right, there's no chash, you take that way, there's no chash of kevis nevela, because you can't make this, you can't make yogurt with kevis nevela, it doesn't work like that.
What's going to happen?
You're going to make mozzarella cheese. If you put in rennet, you're not going to make a soft cheese, you're going to make a hard cheese. It won't make.
Wasn't something about it that's going to separate on its own?
No, separate on its own has to do with why we don't, because what isn't it an amendment from the rennet? The separate zone is actually is because of the acidity. If you leave the milk by itself, the milk starts to spoil. The acidity of the spoiling milk causes it to become cottage cheese. That's what goes on. That's what makes into a soft cheese. Okay. Now, when we're talking about cheese means casein protein, that's the name of the protein, casein with fat. That's what cheese is. Okay, but you could also make cheese without the fat in it. If you start with, if you take all the milk out of the, all the fat off the milk, you start with non-fat milk, then you could make cheese also. But then it doesn't come out as cheese, because I told you cheese means casein with fat. If you make it with fat-free milk, then you come out with just casein. Okay, so you make the same, do the same thing. You get making cheese needs to remove the curd, remove the protein, the casein protein out. So you can make the same thing. If you start with fat-free milk, then you come out with just casein. So the same thing. You could have rennet set casein or acid set casein. So if you make, if you put rennet into whole milk or into low fat milk, you end up with mozzarella cheese. If you, or you end up with cheddar cheese or one of those other kind of hard cheeses. If you put it into fat free milk, then you end up with rennet casein. You just get the casein without the fat of it. You just the protein part of it without the fat part of it, and that's called casein. And then there's also acid set casein. Again, if you start with fat free milk and you put an acid into it, you get acid casein. So the same thing applies. So you need givinicisol for rennet casein, but you don't need givinicisol for acid casein. Okay. When you make cheese, the leftover, the part that's not the cheese, is called whey. It has lots of things in it. The most prominent of them is the whey protein. So it's called, that whole thing is called whey. And there are different ways, there are different methods, that the whey can be have bileus from the curd, from the cheese. Okay, we don't have to talk about what they are. But there are different ways, there are different methods that can happen. And therefore, whey, you have to just pay attention to how it was made to make sure you avoided those kind of ways, those kind of methods that Tom could have spread to that. Okay, one of the things that comes out of the things that come out of that liquid are, like, of course, whey, like whey protein, like if you're a bodybuilder, like whey protein. But there's also lactose comes from that as well. So it has the same chashas. Whatever chashas is for whey, it applies to lactose, because lactose is separated from that same part also. Okay. Now, in countries that have lots of milk and cheese, most prominent Ireland and New Zealand, they have lots of milk and cheese. So then they have, their main product that they're making is cheese. So what's left over after that is whey. Okay, so their whey is could be fine. That it is what it is. As we talked about, the kasha status of it is what it is. But one of the things you could separate out of that is lactose. Okay, lactose is a sugar. Now we talked about once beforehand, sugars can be used to make fermentations. So they have lots of lactose left over from which they could. So when we need glucose to make, when we need sugar in order to make a fermentation, we make it from corn because we got lots of that. They have lots of lactose. There's a potential that they'll use that lactose to make their fermentations. There are some people actually use whey straight to make the fermentations. We have a company who did that. They use the whey itself. They make their fermentation using whey. We have a company. They were making it. I looked at
the unseparated whey. Separated whey.
No, just whey. Just the whey itself. Whey as in. I don't remember if it was liquid.
Was it lactose?
The only thing that was fermenting was the lactose, but the whey part, I guess, gave other time to the thing that was going on. But it was strange. But the part that ferments, the part that something happens to is the sugar shaboy. That's the lactose of it. So in these countries, there's a chash of that they will use it to make plain fermentation, just like we've told the other times. The chash is that people who will use their, who have extra grape, or use that grape, sugar from grape, or alcohol from grape in their fermentations, okay? So, if it comes from those places, then that taints all the things that are made by fermentation, because there's chashas that the fermentation could have been made with a sugar that's either milchins, in this case, potentially even treif, as we've said, or come from samyayin. So citric acid and xanthan gum and vitamins are made by fermentation. All kinds of things made by fermentation, especially from these kind of places, have more of chashash that they may be not kosher. Okay, I am not going to go on because I have many more pages to go. We have more things to go. We'll do it a different time. I'll mention before we walk out that don't. I've been focused so far on what things that are trait. Okay, the chashash of kalim. Of trade, which also was a chashash. All these things have kalim chashash also that translate on. That's going to be the very last part when we get there eventually.